You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. Do I sound happy? There's a lot to be happy about. It's the happy fun time with the Massive Report podcast group. Bart, Ori, Alex, Patrick, and Alex's Pizza. I'm Brian. Alex has ordered a cheese pizza, and he can't wait for it to arrive. I asked him if he was a five-year-old ordering a pizza with nothing on it. And he took offense.
Come on, we need a Foligno's favorite.
Dude, I'm eating it while we're recording this podcast, and yeah, I'm not going to say the company because it's not Papa John's, sponsor of the Columbus Crew Soccer Club. Right. But very good pizza arrived, very hot, very satisfied.
But nothing on it. I'm confused by that. Oh, well. Hey, before we get into all the great game action, the fact that the Crew are now 5 points clear in the Eastern Conference, I wanted to get a sense from any of you guys who, and I know none of you were able to attend, very few people were because of the obvious restrictions, but there were 1,500 supporters at the Crew game for Hell is Real on Sunday. And I'm curious from any of you, if you talked to anyone that was there, and if they gave you some snapshots as to how their experience was, it looked like it was a fun experience that they'll look back on as being a very unique Crew game day experience for all of them that were there.
Certainly. As you mentioned, neither Ori or I were there. We kind of rotated our coverage this week to get other guys a chance to cover a game since we only know three home games at a time, apparently. But I did talk to Patrick Goldan, who covered the game. And this was his first time coming to a game since the restart. And so I talked to him about the protocols, and we've discussed that a little bit on here from a media standpoint. But he said he was surprised a little bit that there wasn't more of a distinction between media interacting with fans. Now, not that he encountered a ton of fans, but it wouldn't have been hard for him to have simply walked over and been in, you know, one of the sections, or come in contact with people, you know, on the concourse or above the, you know, seats and whatnot. So he was a little surprised by that, but I think all in all, it was handled as well as can be expected, from people I talked to. I think anytime you get people, especially if you're serving alcohol at an event like that, be it a sporting event like this or, you know, going out to a bar, not that I've been to many bars in the last several months, but my understanding is sometimes things tend not to follow the rules. Certain people tend to not follow the rules. And I think you saw that in some of the broadcast coverage, was that there were a few people that didn't keep their masks on and things like that, which is unfortunate. But I think for the most part, people adhered to the rules, kept their distance. I know someone mentioned to me that the Nordic towards the end of the game got a little compact. This is the first time, so obviously things to build on for the Crew as we expect more home games. But yeah, I think all in all, it probably went fairly smoothly from kind of an outsider's point of view and talking to people. But yeah, definitely things that they'll look at and try and get better for the next match, from my understanding.
Well, and this is just my perception from watching the game on TV, that the players were appreciative and went over after and
yeah,
tried to treat it as a game before all this happened. And I noticed just in general watching on TV that, they were trying to make a lot of racket and give the Crew some sort of home field advantage beyond just playing on your own pitch.
Yeah, they even turned off the crowd noise at one point in the game because there was actual crowd there, so they didn't need that. I do think the players appreciate it, and they talked about it after the game. And to me, it seemed a little weird to go ahead when you're only getting 1,500 fans in the stadium. I mean, if this is an economic decision, how much are you really making off of, you know, having the people there and then having to hire, you know, people to work concessions and security and all the stuff that you didn't have to do for the first two games? But I do think that from a, you know, team and players perspective, I think they felt a little bit more at home with the supporters there, even if it was a limited amount.
Well, I also think that, you know, this is a good way to figure out what works and what doesn't going forward too. It can be a little bit of a dry run without a great deal of people to deal with. You have longtime season ticket holders for the most part. So they're going to be people that are familiar to the club. And so I think it's a good place to start if you're going to start somewhere. So I would think that probably had something to do with it. Just make sure that it was managed.
Yeah, I think that's one of the points too, Brian. They talked about how this is going to be, you know, sort of self-policed, at least that the fans were supposed to, Nordek was supposed to kind of self-police. I think we saw, you know, later in the game that maybe got away, and maybe that is something that I think fans, you need to be able, the power of peer pressure works. So you guys need to, you know, be talking to each other. And when somebody's, you know, it's one thing if you've got that beer in your hand, but if you're done with the beer, that mask should be going on. And you guys should be trying to socially distance in Nordek. I know it's hard and you want to be around, but if we want to still be able to have people at games, I think there's got to be a degree of self-policing. And then I think the stadium, you know, needs to step in, because ultimately this is falling under them. I think they did about as good a job as you can expect from it. But I think there's still room for this to grow a bit, and especially how FC Cincy fans got in there is beyond me.
Oh, really? Now that I did not hear. Were there a lot?
I couldn't hear them from the game, but I saw a lot of number of people posting about it on social media, including within the Nordek. And well, that means, and that's where I think you run into a big problem, can run into a problem, because it's one thing for fans, season ticket holders who are buying these tickets, and you're going to go with your group responsibly. You know you're going to do it. You can count for it. It's another thing if you were buying these to sell them on StubHub, aftermarket, to anybody.
You know, that this isn't the time to make a profit off your season tickets. I mean, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your hard-earned money, but this is a game where you shouldn't be selling your tickets. Certainly not throwing them out there where you can't control who gets them. Because it's beyond just having the other team supporters in the stadium. It's where, as to your point, Bart, that's where problems start. People get a few drinks behind them. They start running their mouths, and pretty soon you got two drunk guys in each other's faces. And that's the last thing we want. So,
and no offense to Cincinnati, but they've got more COVID cases than we have in Franklin County right now. So you're having people who have a higher likelihood of being infected with COVID driving up for this game. You know, I think it went about as well as you could expect, but I also think that soccer is, at least soccer in the United States, is uniquely ill-suited for the environment that we find ourselves in, because it is an environment where, you know, if you're in Nordeka, you're expected to sing. Like, that is what you do in Nordeka. In a normal game, if you're sitting down and you're being quiet, people are going to get mad at you. People are going to say something. They're going to say, hey, stand up, you know, or get out of the section. We self-police that way all the time, where people who are, you know, just kind of there to watch the game, you know, especially if you're in the first couple rows, somebody's going to say something to you. And you know, you're expected to participate and cheer on the crew. The environment that we find ourselves in, if you are shouting, you are spraying liquid out of your mouth at a greater distance than if you're just, you know, not saying anything and just breathing normally, right?
Yeah.
And so you have this conversation of people shouting and people doing the normal crew chants and people not wearing masks. And that is a really bad combo if you're trying to stop the spread of this thing. So the fact that it wasn't really enforced by ushers for the most part, and it was just kind of left up to fans to kind of, you know, tell other fans what to do, I think that's probably not the best case scenario. And, you know, it brings up the point as to whether or not these are really rules or more of just like, it would be really good if you did this kind of guidelines.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that they, you know, from what I saw on television, it did not look like an environment where I would feel safe. I heard from some people who were there that they did not feel particularly safe. And that's a problem going forward. And hopefully this doesn't become a bad situation.
Patrick, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I think just a couple quick things. I think we should be fair to any FC Cincinnati fans that did show up despite the rivalry. You know, these could be people who live in Columbus that, you know, were able to get tickets from season ticket holders that didn't want to go. I think it's just unfair to assume that it was on StubHub and people were doing things that they shouldn't have. Because I agree, I think this is not the time to be selling tickets on StubHub if that is what happened. And I also think, or from my understanding, the tickets weren't sold, you know, like Nordic people didn't necessarily sit in the Nordic, from my understanding. So it wasn't, you know, the typical Nordic crowd. You know, I talked to a couple people that I know normally sit there that were down closer to the south end. So hopefully that kind of spaced out people that do tend to yell, and obviously hopefully they were wearing masks. But I think Alex's concerns are real. I think this is something that, you know, you obviously had to weigh if you were the crew. And you know, we saw that they were given approval to do this, obviously, but there was some pushback by people they were working with. I think Jacob Myers had a story about it on the Dispatch about, hey, we advised not to do this yet, just because, you know, Columbus moved into the yellow, I believe it is, zone. So, you know, it wasn't a unanimous decision by any stretch to, hey, we're ready to have fans back. But you know, they felt like they could do it, and clearly they need to police things a little bit better next time around.
All right. Well, lessons learned, I'm sure. And we'll find out where we stand in the future. We don't know beyond Saturday who are even playing, correct?
Not yet, but it sounds like that should be announced very soon. Maybe I'd heard potentially today. That obviously hasn't come out as of our recording this. So if not today, I would imagine tomorrow, which would be Wednesday for people listening to this later. So yeah, I think we'll see a schedule here very quickly.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just one quick thing. I mean, they do have the ability to police this, at least during normal times.
Definitely.
I know that, you know, as someone who's been in the Nordeca for a long time, you know, we use smoke bombs now, and that's kind of front office approved, and there are certain people who have that that permission to do that, and you know, they go through training and they're allowed to kind of use those. But for many, many years, especially yellow smoke bombs were really, really frowned upon, and you would get ejected from the stadium if you used one. The reason being was that people could have an adverse reaction to that and might have trouble breathing or something along those lines. And so they've made decisions in the past to go all the way to the point of ejection and threatening stadium bans for people who have kind of endangered other people in the stadium. So it's definitely something that, you know, they have the ability to kind of deal with if they need to. I just hope that they kind of take a look at what those policies are. And, you know, it's the first game, so, you know, mistakes are going to happen. And, you know, it's not a perfect system. Nobody's dealt with this before. But I do think that they'll probably have to look more at kind of, you know, how they're policing this stuff.
Well, there's a huge dam in the Netherlands. It's called the Jaapstal. That thing broke the other night, finally.
That was good.
We went to halftime, 0-0. And in my notes, Patrick, you wanted to talk about how we finally got some production off the bench. But in a way, we kind of started the bench, at least part of the bench, and we didn't score. And then in the second half, we made some changes. Diaz and certainly the again, new father, Jossie Zardes, produced in a big way in the second half. And the crew beat Cincinnati 3-0, doing exactly what Bart said they were going to do. I needed that other goal for my wild prediction of 4-0 to come true, but I feel pretty good. I was pretty close to that. But they did exactly what we said they needed to do. And it's pretty simple when you play Cincinnati. You got to score. If you score, it changes the whole game. But even after we scored the first goal, they were still pretty conservative, weren't they? All right.
Yeah, I mean, they were pretty conservative in this game in Columbus, but less so than the way they played, I think, on Saturday. It's just that Cincinnati was unable to get really any set piece opportunities throughout the whole game. And if they did, it's not like much was done. Eloy Roux maybe had to make a save or two all game. But the big he made no save, so he didn't even have to do anything. No. He could have had dinner back there. But for me, the biggest takeaway from this game, in my opinion, and that should make the rest of the league scared, is how well Darlington Nagbe played in the number 10 role. I thought he took control of that role and said, you know what, I'm going to play a little differently. We did see those ball feints and those switch of directions that we usually see from him in center mid, but in a more advanced role, he was running down the middle of the field. He was trying to create stuff. He forced a lot of fouls in the first half to give Columbus set piece opportunities, which that's, to me, they have to work on their set pieces at the training ground. Free kicks and crossing territories and corner kicks have just not been the way the Crew can make any dangerous opportunities. They go far post, and it's always too far post, not many near post. But and the fact that Caleb Porter has that option to play Darlington Nagbe at the number 10, and he can confidently put him there in case Lucas Zelarayan is unavailable or he wants to rotate, I think that should really scare the league, because that really makes Columbus even more dangerous and adds more depth, because you have someone who can play in that role to the almost a similar extent as Lucas Zelarayan and Pedro Santos. Caleb Porter did say that Pedro Santos did play well in that role when he was in there, but it was a very, very good second half from Columbus. And I remember myself and other people in this podcast were alluding to maybe starting the subs more, so then you bring on some speed off the bench. We saw Diaz, we saw Zardes off the bench. Not sure if that was from a tactical standpoint from Caleb Porter, but or a rotational standpoint. I think it's a mixture of both, but a very, very good performance. And this is the best start in club history, and they've got a plus 14 goal difference. Second best in the league is half of that.
In order to your point there, you know, you have the luxury of moving Darlington up to the number 10 because there's confidence in other guys playing those central midfield roles.
Yeah.
It's difficult to move him up and keep Pedro Santos wide where he tends to be a little bit better and all of those things. If you don't have Artur playing as well as he is.
Yeah.
Fatai Alashe came in and played a solid game.
Good shift.
Yeah. And then you can bring a guy like Sebastian Berhalter in off the bench. He's shown he can start. You know, this was a position group that we said at the beginning of the season was probably the one we had the most questions about, because you only had Nagbe and Artur as starters, and then two rookies in Berhalter and Aiden Morris that, you know, were there as backup. And now Berhalter's proven himself a little bit. You brought in a guy in Alashe. So I think to further your point, you need that depth in order to move Nagbe up and keep Santos out wide. And I agree with you. He played very well in there. And, you know, it's a different look than you get with Zelarayan, but it's still an effective one.
I'm concerned about Nagbe getting hurt, though, if in that number 10 role. Guys are certainly looking to chop him down as the only way they can really stop him, because he's so good on the ball and doesn't need a lot of outlets. He can create his own space. So that's just something to think about. But obviously, I mean, that's the only complaint I have. I mean, he played so well, and he's way more versatile than I gave him credit for before he joined the Crew. Like I said a few weeks ago, I'm watching him in a completely different way now and appreciating so much not only the obvious things he does, but all the subtleties. It's just so wonderful. And, you know, Jossie, off and on, we've complained about him not being a finisher. And he's getting the service, and he's finishing it. I mean, he's in a really good place right now. He's having fun. You could tell.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, because he became a father, you know, this week. Had another child, and also got to spend time with one of his children in FC Cincinnati, and kind of, you know, reminded them, you know, who their daddy is. So really enjoyed
they're
that.
All
one.
His children.
Yeah,
are the FC Cincinnati's side at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Jossie did a real public service for the people of Cincinnati, which was he once again kind of advanced them one stage in the grief process. I think, you know, the Cincy fan base was probably, you know, 50% in the anger category and 50% in the bargaining category, and I think now they've kind of moved into the depression and acceptance, and, you know, we just got to get the rest of them more towards the acceptance side. But you saw Cincinnati's official website posted an article saying that the Crew are the dominant side in the rivalry. So at least some of them are getting there. So I think that's a good step and a healthy step for all involved to just understand who's the boss in the situation. And he was great. I mean, they had no answer for him when he came on. There was just nothing that anybody could do.
I just want to point out how much I loved his first goal, because there was some great passing in there, but also following up a missed shot. That is such an important thing to do as a striker.
Absolutely.
Whether somebody else is taking the shot, a cross coming in, part of the job as a striker is to follow up shots and always be the one running towards the net. He missed a shot, and he's like, I'm going to follow it up. He didn't back off or anything like that. And without that follow-up, he doesn't score.
That is a great point, Ari. You know, we talk about the beautiful goals, but so much – of goal scoring, especially in that position, is nothing more than picking up the trash. And throughout the course of a season, we should see you get two or three easy tap-ins, two or three weird bounces that you're in the right position for. That's an excellent point. And that's certainly something he knows, a player of his level. Compare and contrast, because certainly during MLS's back, we were so excited about Yunus Mukhtar that he got hurt. In this game, we got to see him play as a starter and then come off for Luis Diaz, who obviously injected a lot of great energy into the team. But compare and contrast the two, and are they compatible to play on the field at the same time, or is it more optimal to do it this way?
You know, I think you can play them at the same time. I think they have a sort of complementary skill set, but I don't know that it's. I think he's still coming back a little bit from that injury too. He just doesn't seem to have the confidence that you were seeing down in Orlando. It takes some of the audacious chances that he took and to really challenge guys one-on-one. I think it's also the Cincinnati back five that you don't have the room to maybe necessarily beat a whole bunch of guys one-on-one with the sort of trickery that he has. But I'm not that concerned with Yunus Mukhtar. I still think he is a starting caliber winger in MLS for the top team in MLS. And I still think it's his spot to lose, even though Luis Diaz was really, really encouraging in his sub performance last weekend.
Yeah, we were waiting for that from Luis. I think at times during this season, we've seen some heavy touches from him. The speed is always there, but sometimes it was a little frustrating in watching the relative lack of skill and ball and not seeing the clean touches from him that we need to see for him to take that next step. Because Yunus, I don't think, is going to be a guy that's going to give us 90 minutes very often, especially with this compact schedule. So I think part of what Caleb is trying to figure out is a rotation of players that works, knowing that, you know, other than the guys in the back, he's going to have to rotate these guys in and out with a lot of creativity. Thank God for the five subs, of course. And I feel like he's really figuring that out, isn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that each of those players offers you something different, right? And when you have a guy like Adi in there from the start of the game, somebody like Mukhtar who can play a really, you know, accurate cross into the box and you know, try to set up a guy like Gotti, I think maybe he offers you something there that Diaz can't offer you, especially when the team is kind of sitting deep. And Diaz, you know, attacking tired wingbacks is going to, you know, cut through people, which we saw in the second half. To me, Mukhtar is much more of kind of a technical player, you know, almost like a Federico Higuain. He's not going to, you know, burn anybody, but he's going to dribble around you and make you look like an idiot and then play a perfect ball in. I still think Mukhtar can do that. I think he's got to get his form back, like Bart said. But I really like Diaz off the bench. And I hate to say that because the kid is good enough to start. I mean, I still want to see him at striker. In fact, I would start him over Adi at this point because I didn't see anything I liked from Adi.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah. If the next time we don't want to start Zardes for minutes management, we give that a shot. It's not going to hurt. I mean, it's not like we're giving up goals and we're taking these huge chances.
And he wants to shoot. And he wants to shoot. And you guys are mentioning compact schedule, tiring out the defense. The way Luis Diaz plays, which is just, I'm going to go after whoever is on my side. In this compact season and these compact schedules where teams are playing two games a week, essentially, maybe he is the super sub. Maybe he is the guy that you to just take off the bench. Mukhtar as the starter to kind of read the game, figure out the tactic behind it. He runs good overlaps with Valenzuela as well, but maybe utilize the speed of Diaz and Etienne off the bench because it's a compact schedule. Teams are getting tired. We saw how well Diaz did off the bench against Cincinnati, and he takes the game into his hands. And I would like to see him play striker, but credit to Fernando Adi for the way he played against Cincinnati. Jossie Zardes talked about this after the game. Good hold-up play. So that kind of allowed the center backs and some of the Cincinnati defenders to sort of go towards him in some cases. So I think Adi is starting to – we're starting to see the role he's kind of forming himself into when he plays. But we'll see if he does get some more starts. I would expect probably a few more in these next games? And then I know Pat wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just think, you know, I wrote about this. I don't think anyone's going to be happy with Adi's performance until he scores. And I think it's possible he goes the entire season without scoring because he doesn't have that look in front of goal that he had when he was playing for Caleb in Portland. But I did think he did some interesting things in this game. You know, he was involved in two of the decent chances they had in the first half, getting on the ball. He was a presence up top. He really battled those center backs. And I think that was the thing that Giassi was referencing when he said, you know, I believe he, you know, phrased it as he tired them out for when I came in, and he gave him credit for that. And, you know, if you're backup forward, you'd obviously like him to chip in some more goals than what Adi's done so far and maybe what he does this season. But I think given his situation and where he is, apparently he's a great locker room guy. I think a guy who can come in and spot start like that and, you know, do things that the other forward recognizes. And I'm not saying you don't try Diaz up top. I think that's a really interesting point. But also, you know, Philly on Wednesday when they were up 1-0, I think that's where he's best, is coming in with the team has the lead, let Giassi come off. And now you've got a bigger body that comes back and helps defend on set pieces, you know, can just hold up the ball and whatnot. I thought he still hasn't been great, but I thought he served his role well in both those games.
You notice something else, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, there were some times where he was dropping really deep. I mean, he was almost, you know, behind where I would expect the number 10 to be. He was kind of dropping into the midfield to collect the ball. And every time that happened, I just felt like the play that we were, you know, the transition died right there, because he would collect the pass. He would, you know, move it out to the wing. And then you would see him make a run forward to try to get back into position. But by the time he got in position, since he had 10 men behind the ball, like, there was no chance for him to kind of, he was out of the play at that point. So, I mean, some of it might not even be the way that Adi is playing from like a form perspective, but what he's kind of asked to do as the number 9 for Columbus Crew SC under Caleb Porter. Like, it might just be a bad fit from kind of a system standpoint to try to get him to be a goal scorer. He might just be a hold up guy, and we just might have to be okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, especially this year when, media doesn't have as much access, you can't watch training and so forth. There are things that we're trying to fill in the blanks on that we really don't know. And guys are asked to do things that we may not understand. And in watching the game, like, well, why are they doing that? Well, you can't complain too much because the results are there. Obviously, we got a goal from Pedro. There are times this year where I felt like he's looked a little lost. Does he feel more comfortable? I hate to say this, but is he more comfortable when Lucas is not in the game? Am I reading too much into this?
Maybe, or maybe not, actually. I think that it's been interesting trying to incorporate him with a true number 10 again, because when he got here, obviously he came as a winger, played with Federico Higuain, and there was a lot of criticism about his offensive production, at least. Then last year, he starts to really blossom in that department, goals and assists, creating for people. And some of that started before Higuain got hurt, but the vast majority of it was when he was playing centrally as that number 10. And so I think it's still trying to figure out, and I think this kind of goes into the Mokhtar, Diaz, Etienne, Boateng conversation, is I think they have the ability now to pick and choose, all right, we want to play this winger on this side to do this thing and this winger on this side to do this thing. And, you know, you can kind of mix and match. And I think ideally, you know, it looks like Pedro and Mokhtar are the starters, but if you want to stretch a defense, you have options and whatnot. And so from Santos, I think it's really trying to figure out what he does on a game in and game out basis, whether it's Zelrayan in there, where he fits playing off Zelrayan with Nagby in there. And it was really in the second half when he played fine in the first half, but it was in the second half when he kind of came alive, which is interesting because he moved to the left-hand side for Diaz. And we've talked previously about how we thought he's playing better on the right-hand side when he could cut in on his left foot. So I thought this was his best performance. I thought he was very active. I still think he gives you a lot defensively that not all the wingers on the team do. But, you know, take the goal and the assist, the statistical stuff aside, I just thought he played a really good game, and I'm hoping that you build on that now, right? And, you know, there were a couple of iffy performances. He finally started to find some things a little bit, and now he's got a goal and an assist out of a game. So hopefully you take that, you look at the positive performances and figure out how to build from there.
Yeah. What do we know about Lucas's injury?
They said he'll be back for Saturday's game against Chicago. I don't think Caleb discussed with us what the injury was.
No, but he was really weird about it.
Yeah.
He took a knock, and then Jacob followed up with him, and he was like, he took a knock, and he just wouldn't say anything else more. But he did, as Ori said, he said he should be back Saturday. But it was weird, the whole situation.
Yeah, it was a little bit. But I did want to sort of echo Pat's point, and he said a key word there that is so important to discuss why Columbus Crew has been successful in these first 10 games. Options. They have so many different ways that they can play. They have so many different players that they can put in different positions, whether putting Nagbe in the 10, a variety of wingers, central midfielders, defensive combinations, even goalkeepers and strikers. And to me, I would like to see those options get tested more, because you know what media and fans and the league might be talking about when, let's say, Columbus has to play Cincinnati 4 more times. So it's like, well, this team hasn't really been tested as much. You know, Columbus might not be able to play Toronto or Orlando or New England or Philly again before the playoffs. So options are great, but I think you want to see those options get tested more.
I think they're going to get tested in phase 2.
You think the schedule, what do you think that, does anyone have a sense of what the schedule is going to look like?
I don't know teams, but I know that they are attempting to diversify, and I believe it's still going to be Eastern Conference teams, but you know, I don't think you're going to see the same repeat group of teams, Chicago twice, Cincinnati twice, you know, that type of thing. I think they're going to try and get you some New England, you know, some, I'm spitballing here, but it's the idea is that they'll be able to now switch up which teams are kind of in those little pods that they've created.
Yeah. Well, I think the obvious plays would be New England, Red Bulls, since we've already played NYC, maybe NYC again. Nashville, not that far away. I would think that you could put them in our sphere. That's only 8 hours. That's kind of a long trip for somebody. DC United, I mean, it's fun to beat up on Cincinnati, but then again, they're the most entertaining games. I'd like to play some other clubs and see how we do. And to that end, it was a real test, and we don't want to spend a lot of time on it because it was so long ago. But what a fascinating game it was against Philadelphia Union. And that first half was frightening. That Aronson kid is the real deal. Anybody have a sense of how long he's going to be here? I don't think he's going to be in this country very much longer. When things open up, I think the world is going to open up to this kid. He's only 19 years old, and he seems to have those attributes that you look for. Do we have a sense of when we can get him away from us? Because he's only going to get better.
I think he's trying to get away from us too. It sounds like he's making an agent change, and there were some rumors that he was trying to arrange some sort of a deal, the Red Bull Salzburg in Germany, who are a, you know, big dog team over there. From some of the Philly reporters were saying basically that was a bunch of nonsense, and that somebody was cooking that up. Maybe not, you know, that there was no fire there. It was just a bunch of smoke. So I don't know if he's just trying to angle for a bigger contract or what he's going for, but kid's definitely ambitious and he's good. So yeah, the sooner they can get him out of our conference, the better, I think. I would much rather just absolutely destroy Cincy every week and just, you know, never lose another game. Mm-hmm. If we play them 4 more times, that's potentially 4 more wins, and they will have no fans left after those 4 wins. Like, their team will fold. There are already people on Reddit and like tweeting at the team's Twitter account, like asking them to go back to USL. So they have to go through 4 more of those. Like, yeah. They might not make it through COVID. Like, they might, you know, they might have to figure something else out. So let's spare them the misery and pain and, you know, beat up on somebody else for a little bit.
Go
ahead.
A game I'd really want to see Columbus play against, just from an entertainment and like a fan standpoint, I would love to see Columbus play Inter Miami at some point in 2020, now that they have Blaise Matuidi, and maybe get Gonzalo Higuain. I think that would just be a fun, interesting game.
I want to play New York City FC in Red Bull Arena, because I think that's, you know, that's going to be like one of those dumb things where we're like, hey, remember remember when we were all, you know, scared of dying from COVID and NYCFC were playing in Red Bull Arena in New Jersey after spending the last 5 years bragging about how they play in the city and the other team doesn't.
Alex, they just did that.
Yeah, I mean, that did just happen.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
And it did not go well.
Yeah, so I think it's fun that they have to do that, right? I think it's really awesome that you know, they're out of Yankee Stadium for the time being, and that could be a fun, memorable game. So we'd love to see them play in
the Yankees are out of Yankee Stadium for the time being, too. They're awful.
That's where they're really beat up. Well, just for what it's worth, I was very impressed with Philadelphia. And they're going to be there at the end. We're going to have to deal with them, again, one way or the other. Just an impressive club and an impressive win for Crew. You know, I left that game going, wiping the sweat off my brow and going, you know, that's one where you go, this is a good Columbus Crew team. Come out of that battle and win that match. So I'd like to play Philadelphia again. And maybe I'm saying that because we're in first place, we're 5 points clear, but I want to see some more tests down the road. I would be fine if we didn't play Cincinnati again this year. Those games are, for the most part, pretty excruciating.
So, and it was a game where Lucas really shined. I know we were touching on the injury, but I mean, he may well have picked up a knock in that Philly game because he was a bulldog, and the way he was beating 2, 3, 4 Philadelphia defenders, bodying them off on him. I mean, pound for pound, he is deceptively strong on the ball, and that I think is really the difference that separates him from, you know, other 10 peers, because he's so strong on that ball. He fights to get that ball back, and, you know, you just give him a little bit of space, and yeah, he got a little bit of luck with the deflection, but he makes it happen.
All right, we're looking ahead to Saturday as the Crew go to Soldier Field in Chicago as Chicago Fire return to the city. The game has been moved to 3:30 on Saturday afternoon. And will air nationally on Univision and Twitter. So we just go to the Crew's Twitter feed? Is that how we watch it? Because I don't have Univision. So
I think it's the MLS Twitter feed that usually.
Yeah, it's either the MLS Twitter feed or they'll retweet TUDN or Univision's Twitter feed. But the Twitter feed will have English language broadcast.
I just want to say, and I'm sure Ori, who went to Illinois and is familiar with Chicago, can back me up on this. I'm just very glad that the Fire are playing back at Soldier Field, or at least back in the city. Maybe not Soldier Field, but
thank you, God, they are. I mean, yeah. My goodness.
It's just, that's a team that, you know, from the early days of MLS, obviously they weren't an original club, but from the early days, you know, we're one of the Crew's big rivals, and, you know, Soldier Field was a tough place for the Crew to play and whatnot. And then they moved out to Naperville briefly, and that was a tiny D3 soccer or high school D3 football stadium. And then they finally get their own stadium and it's a place where no one wants to go and can't get to and whatnot. So I'm just glad that one of MLS's not original clubs, but a club that I think most people in the league respect is back in a, you know, downtown stadium and looking to be a bit more ambitious than the Bridgeview Fire era.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who's never been to Bridgeview but has a girlfriend of 5 years who is born and from Chicago, many friends who I went to college with from Chicago, they all told me the same thing. Bridgeview's awful. Toyota Park is not the place.
No.
And even though they might not be Chicago Fire fans and root more for the Bears and the Blackhawks and the Bulls and the Cubs and the White Sox, they all, in unison, Bridgeview is awful. So yeah. I think for the Fire, it's good to be at Soldier Field.
It's out by the airport and I believe Midway. And
it's Midway, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, there's literally nothing around. I remember one year when we were there to cover the game, you know, we had to leave the stadium. We were looking for some place to work before we started driving back. And the only place we could find is like a Starbucks, like a mile and a half away. And there's just not much out there. And the stadium was fine. It was an improved Mafre Stadium, so it wasn't anything special. And the fact that the fans, who at one point were some of the best fans in the league, couldn't get out there, especially for weekday games, it was just bad. So, you know, it's not going to be great in Soldier Field when fans can come back, because you're going to have to deal with the cavernous kind of stadium, and they're not going to draw that big crowd. And, you know, obviously football lines will be on the field at some point in the year and whatnot, but I do think it's a better position that they're in, even though they're not in a soccer-specific stadium. Now we can talk about the team. I just wanted to notice that.
Their position in the standings is one of desperation, as they sit 3 points clear of last place here in Miami. They did beat Cincinnati 3-0, so they solved that puzzle too. Then they go to NYC and lose 3-1. Then they draw with Cincinnati in Nippert 0-0. So Cincinnati, they're like a praying mantis, just got them into their trap. And then home to New England for their last game before this one, and they lose 2-1. They're surrendering goals now, and other than to Cincinnati, and they're not scoring. I mean, it's pretty simple. We talked about this before we played the last game with Chicago and beat them 3-0. Where are the goals coming from these guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much Robert Berich and Frankowski. Those are really your two best attacking players. I mean, Fabian Herbers scored the goal against New England, but I would change the words you use there, Brian, rather than solve Cincinnati. It's more they scored within the first 90 seconds and didn't really have to play the park the bus against them. So they took advantage of an opportunity early on, got another one, because if Cincinnati concedes in the first 90 seconds, they can't play their game because they have to open up. And when they open up, they just don't have anything. They don't offer anything to the table to really be competitive. So, I mean, that was probably their best win. But actually, no, their best win is probably against Seattle at MLS's back.
Yeah, after
the Nashville and Dallas dropouts, Chicago didn't know where they were going to be. They moved them into the Western Conference Group B with Seattle. Who else was in there? Vancouver and San Jose. And then after these delays and everything, they actually beat Seattle. So that's probably their best win. But then they lost two straight to get knocked out of MLS's back. So this is a very random team. There's so many different results you're seeing from them this season. But they have a couple decent players. I think Robert Berich is a solid striker in MLS. But, you know, I think this will be another game where Columbus will be able to do their thing. And it'll be interesting to see if Columbus can keep the foot on the gas the whole time, because we saw them have their foot on the gas against Chicago for about the first 20, 25 minutes. Then they kind of stepped back in the beginning of the second half, and then they were reignited after the Nagby thunder strike.
Well, I mentioned being excited that the Fire are back at Soldier Field, but that's a place that the Crew has had its nightmares over the years. It's been a long time since the team's played there, but that's, you know, that's just for whatever reason. It's like playing at RFK Stadium back in the day. It's just a kind of a bugaboo for the Crew for some reason or another. But like we talked about the last time they played, you know, this is a Fire team that I think is looking long term. You know, they're back in the city. They want to build this roster the right way this time around. You know, they're not signing Bastian Schweinsteiger at the very end of his career, things like that. So I think they're, you know, they realize that this year is take what you can get, kind of. And so the Crew should take advantage. I think that, you know, you showed in the first game, especially that first half and then the last probably 10, 15 minutes, that you're a better team than this Fire team. But like Ori said, you've got to do it for a full 90. And the defense, which has been the most impressive thing that we probably don't talk about enough for this Crew team, has to continue to play as well as it has pretty much all season.
Do we see, because it seems like since the NYC game, Buba has been sort of in timeout. I would like to see him on the field again this Saturday. I think this is a good game to get him back into the fold and get him some confidence. Because as we talked about after the game, it wasn't like he didn't do anything well. I thought he was really great at closing down the ball and showed a lot of confidence in doing that. It's just a few dinky back passes, side passes that were ill-advised. But I would like to see him starting 11. Anybody else, or maybe you agree or disagree with that, anybody else you'd like to see the field against Chicago on Saturday?
I think you are right, Brian. And it's one of those, you know, this was – we can flash back to 2016, and guys like Jonathan Mensah, who are now in defensive and at least in Columbus and starting to eventually in wider MLS circles get talked about as a player. I say that even though he did not make the top or the team of the week. but he was making those sort of mistakes in Greg Berhalter's system when he first came to MLS. Some of those passes that kind of left you scratching your habuba back in there. I think you might see a little bit more rotation too on the outside of the back four to maybe get a guy like, and it sounds like, okay, I don't know if I may or may not have been breaking up. We're good.
Anyway, it sounded kind of cool.
Hey, I'll just stick with it.
It was robot Bart Logan for a minute.
If you could have put like a really really computerized beat on that, it would have been like an old school Gary Newman song. Or
is it like a Radiohead interlude track?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, there you go.
But I think we got what you were saying, Bart. Keep going.
Yeah, I heard every third word you said, Bart, but I completely agree.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I think what you were saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that Mensah, we forget that there was a time when his play could be a bit ragged, and now there's no one on that field that instills more confidence than Jonathan Mensah. When you see him on the field, you just feel like, all right, everything's going to be fine. We're good to go. So, I don't know. I'd like to see Buba. Anybody else like to see anybody else? I'd like to see Berhalter play more this Saturday. I'm very intrigued by him. See him get some more minutes.
I think the Berhalter thing's interesting because as much as we talked about him a little bit earlier, you know, if you play him, assuming Zellerayan is back as we were told, then you are taking off either Artur or Nagbe. And this is a game, obviously, where you're coming off – you know, it's not a game on short rest. So you expect, assuming health, you know, you're one of your strongest lineups. The guy I would point to is Diaz. And we talked about him earlier. I think that this is a Chicago back line that he can really run by. We saw that in the first game. He had a couple good chances. And, you know, that when you have a young player like that and he comes off the bench and performs well, assuming it works out tactically and everything you want to do, I think you reward that guy. Try and keep that confidence high. You know, now whether how you tweak the winger lineups will be interesting, but that's a guy I think could do some damage against Chicago.
That's an excellent point. I would like to see that as well. These are fun problems to have as we're still trying to get more confidence in the guys coming off the bench, but yet it feels like there are so many starting combinations that we can go with that we feel good about. So that's a good problem to have. So Patrick is going to pick up a pizza at the door. Does anybody else have anything to add?
I would just say that I think Luis Diaz. The other, I think Yunus Mokhtar, you know, may benefit from starting on the bench, and that just that competition you want to have. And Jordan Angeli, who's done a great job since joining the crew broadcast booth with Neil Sika, was bringing up that competition. I think that's really a good thing to have that crew's got. And I think it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for Yunus to maybe start on the bench, get a little bit hungry, get a little bit angry, and then maybe come on and make a big difference.
I'd like to see Emmanuel Boateng maybe make a start. I think that would be an interesting start, especially for this game against Chicago. I mean, we did see Luis Diaz have success against the Fire at MAPFRA. And then we mentioned Buba Keita. I mean, he hasn't played since his mistake that he made against New York that essentially was the mistake that caused the loss, essentially. So I think this would be a good opportunity as well to get him a game, because just instill more confidence in him, get him some game time. But Williams and Mensah have been pretty solid there recently. I mean, since that goal they conceded to New York, they haven't conceded.
Well, maybe Williams can't come off the field until he scores. So remember, there was a point last season when he was our leading scorer.
There's a tattoo on the line for a Williams goal, and I think that, you know.
I forgot about that.
I'm not
like a Sergio Ramos.
Yeah, I'm not saying that, you know, we should put him up top with Luis Diaz and see what happens. I'm just saying, you know, what's the worst that could happen, right? You know, put Keita in at center back, put Williams up at striker, and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may.
Sure, yeah. We gotta make it interesting.
I think he does have more MLS goals in the last, like, probably year than Fernando Adi.
Yeah, more than FC Cincinnati, too. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh. And with that, we'll kind of start to wind things down here. We put it up on Twitter, hashtag MRProd, to see if there were any queries. Please discuss Alkeo saying he wants to play in Miami. We kind of touched on that already. Anything to add?
I mean, I think it's really clear what's happening here with the Falcao's comments about Miami.
Sorry, Falcao.
Yeah, it's really clear what's happening here. And it's clearly a negotiating tactic for the Columbus Crew. You know, that Falcao is trying to get a little bit more money out of the Crew before he makes that commitment and we win back-to-back-to-back MLS Cups. So I think that's, you know, clearly what you should read into those rumors is that he's for sure coming to Columbus.
All right, for the uninitiated,
it's not
some background on this guy, because it would be, if I'm not incorrect, would be a big addition to a bad Miami team, right?
Yes. Yeah, no, he's really good. He's been flirting with the idea of joining Major League Soccer for a couple years now, but he's a really, really super talented striker, number nine for Colombia, you know, one of the most talented number nines in the world, I think. So they seem to be talking about Higuain right now, but Falcao is clearly signaling that he would like to join Major League Soccer in the future. And as with every player who currently plays in Europe, he would like to go to Miami because that is where they all spend their summers anyway. So just, you know, summer break all year round, you know, see what happens. I wonder if a lot of these guys are going to be lazy when they go to Miami. I'm really curious to see what happens with it. Because it is the summer destination for these guys. Maldini used to go there every single summer. And people I follow on Twitter would be like, I just ran into Paolo Maldini on the beach and, you know, everybody's down there. So
and they all wear, I bet they all wear Speedos too.
Listen, if I looked like Radamel Falcao, so would I. So you know, no shame there.
So are we at the point with Gonzalo Higuain that it's time for him to join MLS? Is it?
I think we're pretty much there. I mean, the rumor mill is pretty clear that he might be joining Miami. Right now, all that we know that's confirmed is he's discussing ending his time with Juventus, but once that discussion is done and he leaves Juventus, then he'll start to look into what club he goes to. I don't think he has the stamina or the age. He's at the age where I don't think he can cut it really in the Prem anymore. I mean, he had a stint at Chelsea. He wasn't really as effective as people had hoped. And then at Juventus, he had a couple of good seasons, but now Juventus are moving on with Ronaldo and Dybala, obviously, and Bernadeschi. So but I think Gonzalo Higuain and Inter Miami would be interesting paired with Matuidi because they need to score goals. Miami can't score a goal.
I think it would be very interesting because I think it would be very similar to Blanco with Chicago back in the day in the sense that he will be an incredibly good goal scorer who will be 40 pounds overweight the entire time he's with the team. He has struggled with his weight even at Juventus and they have some of the best physios in the entire world. I think you put him down there in Miami with that food scene and that party scene, dude is going to be a whale in like 3 weeks. And, you know, he's just going to be hobbling around in the 18 yard box. And, you know, whatever happens, you know, he'll still score 20 goals. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's going to be entertaining. He is going to be fat and he's going to be scoring goals in Major League Soccer. And I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Just so we're clear, Falcao played 36 times in the English Premier League and scored 5 goals. So I disagree.
That great summer at Manchester United where they also got Di Maria.
Yeah,
he had horrible knee injuries that he has since recovered from, and the surgeries were very successful. He has done very, very well in France. I would take Falcao in a heartbeat. All I'm saying, 3-5 Crew. You got Zellerayan as a number 10. You got Zardes, and you got Falcao. If you're an MLS defender, how are you supposed to mark those three guys?
It'll be super easy because it won't happen.
They're going to just cry. They're just going to cry. They're just going to crawl up in a ball and cry.
We don't need them. We don't need them. So Matt asks.
I think he waits until Federico Higuain retires because he doesn't want to be shown up by his older brother.
There we go.
All right, fair enough. Matt writes to hashtag MRProd, how long do you think it will be before Garber finally admits that the Crew are the best in the league? Well, I think if he has to hand over that trophy, then at that point he will be de facto admitting that we are the best in the league. Short of that, I am not holding my breath.
Yeah, they'd need to be doing the, you know, being top of the league, having a historically great defense in a new stadium downtown. So I think he's not getting anywhere close to that until at least we're in the new stadium.
So Andrew writes, he's dreaming of a post-COVID world. I'm not sure that he's aware that Chuck E. Cheese went bankrupt. He writes, who would you rather have another a pizza party at Chuck E. Cheese with? Jossie with his kids, or Josh Williams with all the GCG bag guys? I'll throw that to Bart first. You see it? That seems like a Bart push.
I mean, as someone who's had a pizza party with Josh Williams and the GCG bag guys, but not at Chuck E. Cheese, I can say it was an incredible experience at Hound Dogs. And I would, although, you know, I'm sure it's a lot of fun with Jossie and the family. I'm taking Josh Williams and his girlfriend, the entrepreneur behind Outland Eggs, that are official egg partners of the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls and can be found at Giant Eagle Market Districts near you.
She's an egg farmer?
Yeah.
Really? Where do they have all their chickens?
I think it's a family farm that are families in the business with. I don't recall. We're going to have to. I've been asking Pat Murphy to get it for a while. But now I think, Brian, you've driven home the point. We need Josh Williams on the Massive Report to talk about the important things, like his girlfriend's egg business.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, my granddaddy was a farmer. This is my interest is peaked here. I want to put on like some knee-high boots and go and shovel chicken shit with Josh Williams. Have a cold one after. Who's with me?
Oh yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah,
let's,
we definitely
shovel
need
out
an
the
egg
chicken
segment.
Coop. And then have omelets and beers.
This podcast is going to get boring in a couple weeks anyway, because the crew are never going to lose again, and so we can just fill a segment with, you know, talking about eggs.
I want to talk to him about his girlfriend's egg farm. That is fascinating. I love it. Thank you for all the questions, and thank you for that information. I did not know that. All right, so next week we'll have the Chicago game to talk about. We'll have the new Phase 3 schedule, hopefully, to talk about. At some point they're going to have to release that. Did we miss anything? Anybody want to add anything?
I think we need to do predictions.
Oh, right. Thank you, Ori. We need to do – I'll let you go first, Ori.
What has Alex got to say, though? I see his hand raised.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, one thing that I want to predict about another team is that FC Cincinnati are once again going to claim that their loss is due to the fact that they had a bad referee, even though it happens every single week, guys. Wake up. Sorry, Ori, continue.
Okay. The refs
all
are
good,
bad
all good.
Every week? Or?
But I'll lead off the picks by saying I think Columbus will win against Chicago. I'm going to say it will be a 1-0 victory. I'll go with that.
All right. Just one, huh?
Just one. My picks are all over the place. That's why I don't bet, because most of the time I'm very, very wrong. But I just go with gut, and sometimes that works out, because in 2015 I got the whole Final Four right, and that's when Michigan State made it as a 7 seed. So
what?
I'm either a genius or a complete moron.
All right. You're filling out my bracket next year. This has been nothing but a lifetime of frustration for me. You're filling out my bracket. We're going to split the money. All right? Ori's on it. Hopefully we'll have a tournament next year. Bart. Oh, wait. Now, Bart, you go last. Your scores are usually right, and they're usually just off the charts outrageous, but you seem to be tapped into the zeitgeist somehow. Patrick.
I'm going to say 2-0 crew, just to distance myself from Ori a little bit, since he's apparently always wrong. And, I think you see a very strong crew lineup, a motivated crew on the road at Chicago. Obviously, we should have the schedule by then, but they know this is the end of Phase 1. You want to end that on a bang, and I think they will.
All right. Alex?
I'm gonna just keep pushing Bart further and further towards the edge here. I'm going to say, because I know he's going to do one more than me, so I'm going to say 3-0 crew. Oh. And I think that there will be a Josh Williams goal, and that and TK will have to get a Josh Williams tattoo. I'm going to say that. And I think it's going to be a set piece. We're going to break the streak of terrible set pieces. And another prediction, I am going to predict that long-term Soldier Field is only going to be a marginal improvement for a stadium over Toyota Park,
Toyota Park
they called
yeah.
it in Bridgeview. terrible stadium. Soldier Field, just a little bit better, still terrible.
All right, Bart, are you going to go one more?
This is that's hard, you know. I was thinking before this to go with our good friends, the Chicago-based Crew Supporters Group 3-1 Crew, but Alex there, and just how historically good this team has been, and how just impotent Chicago's looked. I do think they keep the shutout streak going. So let's go with 4-0. Why not?
All right, saw that one coming. I should have predicted 5. Then Pat would have done 6. Then Alex 7. Then it would have been 8-0.
I'm going 5.
Oh,
that's Lord. I'm going 5.
There we go.
Hey, what is happening? I went 4-0 with Cincinnati, yep. And I came close. According to my calculations, I only missed it by 1. I'm going 5-0.
So those are easy picks to remember. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I've ever heard.
This is like Sesame Street here. We're just missing the count. That's what we're missing. All right. Well, we're simpletons when it comes to math, but hopefully you've enjoyed listening to the Math Support Podcast. For Ari, for Alex, for Bart, for Patrick, I'm Brian. Thank you so much for listening and for all your outstanding crew coverage and photography and all of it. It's right there at massivereport.com, and we'll talk to you next week.